here, everybody. Glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall, and you're listening to Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. Last June, Baltimore-based author James Magruder published a new collection of interrelated short stories called Let Me See It. It's about family. It's about coming of age. It's about coming out. It's about the complexities and challenges that we all face at different times in our lives. James Magruder is the former dramaturg at Center Stage. He's an award-winning translator, a playwright, and the author of a novel, Sugarless. I spoke with James Magruder about his new book last summer. So early in the book, in the second story, we're introduced to a little kid named Elliot Bidler. He's 11 years old. It's 1971. Tell us a little bit about Elliot and then what we learn about Elliot as the book proceeds.
Well, Elliot is, this is a very autobiographical collection, as was Sugarless. Elliot is, he's 11, and he wants to please, and he wants to score very, very well at whatever he does. And his parents are splitting up. And in that particular story, he's called upon to do a fifth grade social studies project. And he and a neighbor boy build a sugar cube pyramid of Tenochtitlan. And complications ensue. And that is, as he grows older, he graduates in the recession, the Reagan recession of the early 80s, as did I, which was the worst recession before this last one. And he's just completely at sea about what to do with his life. And as he goes on, he has affairs with older men that are sort of mysterious to him. And by the end, he's not doing so well. He's dying of AIDS in Paris. I've just given away. Well, I haven't given away the whole book. He doesn't die. Well, no, now I really have given away the book. Anyway.
And later on, just a story or two later after the first one, we are introduced to Tom Emilio. At that point, he's 18 years old. He's Elliot's cousin. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about Tom.
Tom has, unlike Elliot has, I would say, a white-collar dad. An accountant, and Tom has a butcher for a father, blue collar, and they're related. Tom's mother is the sister to Elliot's father, but they almost never see each other. Elliot's family hopscotches around the country, and Tom stays put in Kansas City. And so he has different expectations as a gay man growing up, son of working class, without one of those, what is it, the dads who can help you invest in. That was just a few years ago about, like, you know, a smart dad or a bad dad. That's about investing money. Anyway, so
there are certainly plenty of both of those.
Right. So Tom follows his head more than his heart. And so as he and his cousin never really meet until they're 25, and they're both in New York for one summer, Elliot convinces Tom to come to New York. And then their differences are made plain by their responses to the AIDS crisis.
Now, you mentioned this is autobiographical. Mm-hmm. Marion Winnick, our dear mutual friend who's hosting the event at the Ivy tomorrow night, says that you've basically split the autobiography of yourself through these two characters. Is that accurate?
I'd say it's accurate. I think reading it all together and thinking about it, I realized that Elliot is the me who should have died in Paris in 1991 because I have had the HIV virus since 1985, but I've had a clean bill of health, zero viral load since 1996. And part of me in the 80s, people were acting up and everyone was dying. I was in grad school in New Haven, and I have survivor's guilt because I didn't march. I didn't help 55 people die. I wasn't taking to the streets. I had the virus, but I was studying French literature and dramaturgy, and I'm just kind of guilty. I mean, I understand survivor's guilt. And so when I was given sort of the chance, or given the second lease on life around 1996, downsized myself at Center Stage, and Triumph of Love went to Broadway. And then I thought, well, really, if I've been given this extra time.
That's the piece that you wrote for Broadway. Mm-hmm.
What should I do with the time that's left? And I thought, well, I need to write. I need to fulfill, quote unquote, my early promise, whatever that meant.
Early, middle, late promise.
Late bloomer.
If you got some promise, grab it, whatever period it comes from. Because you do write, this period, the book covers the period from early 1970s to the beginning of the 1990s. He's right in the middle of the sort of the apex of this terrible crisis, the AIDS crisis. And it strikes me that there are two things about
how we thought of this crisis back then and how we are thinking about them now. Two parameters that really affect how people approach this. One is the time difference. It was very different being a young gay man in the 1970s than it is being a young gay man now. And also the place difference. And you write about places that you have lived. Part of it's in Illinois, part of it's at Cornell where you went to, part of it's in Paris where you spent some time. You write about it in these different places. It's a very different thing being a gay man in Greenwich Village in 2014 than in Wheaton, Illinois in 1975.
Right.
Yes. And so were these conscious, were you conscious of how people were reacting to, just the whole issue of the gay movement and in particular the AIDS crisis in all these different places?
I had to change some locations around to kind of make the cousins fit. But, New York in 1985, which is when the cousins get together, Elliot is kind of, he's not being an ostrich about it, but Tom is very, very aware there's something out called Safe Sex and one should adhere to it. But, I don't know if you saw The Normal Heart, which has just been on HBO
right,
this
I
month.
I have not, but I hear
I had
great
somehow
about it.
Missed it in the 80s. Again, it might have been a self-protective gesture, but there were so many men in the 80s in New York who just didn't want, no, I'll die anyway. Nobody's going to tell me how to live my life or who to have sex with or how to have sex. And I remember at the time thinking safe sex seemed like the most ridiculous thing possible. And that's the subject of my next book, which I'm going to, once I finish doing this little mini tour of Let Me See It, I'm going to try to find a publisher for.
You and your partner, Steve, have just gotten back from a place that is perhaps one of the most inhospitable places for gay people on the planet. That's Uganda. We did a spotlight series, our Maryland Film Festival WYPR spotlight series with a fellow named Roger Ross Williams, a director who made a terrific movie called God Loves Uganda.
Great film.
And it's about, in part, American evangelicals who are going there and promoting strident anti-homosexual laws in Uganda. You were actually living there. Your partner, Steve, is a neuronatal nurse practitioner. You were doing studies. He was doing studies related to work at Hopkins. And you had to get out of there quick when the recent legislation passed. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, overnight, in mid-March, we got we were an openly gay couple living in Uganda. But again, we were Muzungus, or Europeans. That's their term, for white people. Because we were a couple, and the real risk for us was that our servants could turn us in. We had a house girl who lived with us, and we had a cook twice a week. And if they didn't report that their employers were gay, they would get 5 years in prison. I mean, we always knew that it was going to be a little tricky there, but everyone kept saying, no, the president is never going to sign it. The president will never sign it. And then suddenly overnight, he signed it.
And signed into law.
Signed it into law.
February.
Yeah. Yes, and it was no longer. They downgraded it from death to life imprisonment now to 15 years in prison for what's known as aggravated homosexuality. So
among other things, and it does, as you say, it requires citizens to inform police about anyone they suspect is gay.
Yeah. And since then, in the last 10 days, while we were packing up our two overweight cats in the household, things got dicey. The hotel clerks were calling the police when two men checked into a hotel together. There was an anti-pornography provision in that bill that meant that people were pulling women whom they deemed were wearing skirts that were inappropriate clothing, pulling them off their Boda Bodas, which are motorbikes, and stripping them publicly. And then a week after we left, there was a gigantic rally held on the president's airstrip with thousands of people and thousands of children waving flags like gays should die. And it was.
But Hopkins made the decision.
Hopkins made this, at least in Steve's case, because we were a couple. Although, again, we were just so, this is the thing, is that Ugandans have no gaydar. It's the American fundamentalists who have lost all traction here in terms of this sort of issue. They go over there and they're sort of like, as you've seen God Loves Uganda, they're sort of nobody preachers, but figure they can go to Africa. And so the legislation, the President Museveni's legislation, actually has boilerplate from the fundamentalists' texts about, so they're just It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you made it back safe.
Yes,
I'm glad your health is good, yeah. And I'm glad you've written this book. It's really a great read. Let me see it. So thanks so much, Jim Magruder. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Tom.
James Magruder, his new book is called Let Me See It. It's published by Tri-Quarterly Books. We spoke here on Maryland Morning last June. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. More ahead. Stay with us.